From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, we're going to take a look at the paranormal side. Here's what's happening. Close call, but we're okay. A house-sized asteroid gave Earth a near miss tonight, passing harmlessly inside the moon's orbit while giving experts a rare chance to rehearse for a real-life strike. The space rock will shave past the Earth at 27,000 miles. We dodged one. Radiation levels across Europe have risen mysteriously, and they say Russia may be behind the baffling phenomenon. German scientists say that there's been a slight increase in the amount of particles of an isotope in Germany, Italy, Austria, Switzerland, and France. Higher levels, they just think maybe something has to do with Russia. The United States has conducted a joint military exercise with South Korea, flying two strategic bombers over the Korean Peninsula. And by the way, North Korea hacked into South Korea's military plans, as we reported yesterday. How did this happen? Let's check in with the expert on the internet, Lauren Weinstein. Lauren, how do they do this?
Yeah, well, they're denying it, of course, and we know that cyber attacker locations are notoriously difficult to pin down. But it would certainly make sense for them to do this. And the fact, if it's true, that South Korea had such weak security on their plans for attacks and defense is pretty startling, because we all know that Kim's ace in the hole isn't really his rockets and isn't really his nukes. It's his conventional weapons and a conventional attack across the DMZ that he could probably launch, killing vast numbers of South Koreans and the Americans who are in South Korea, even if the U.S. or some other party launched a devastating attack on North Korea.
Those That's
right. conventional weapons are easy to launch, and it's just a few miles to do it. So that's the obvious way for North Korea to protect itself. The obvious thing that North Korea wants to know about is how to make that conventional war as successful as possible. And getting hold of South Korea's defense plans and their offensive plans for conventional war is just what Kim would want. So it's baffling, really.
Are they that good as hackers?
They're apparently very good. Now,
yeah.
Whether every attack that we say is from North Korea or that is claimed to be from North Korea actually is from there, that we don't know. But there's a lot of evidence to suggest that the limited resources that North Korea has, and remember, most people in North Korea are essentially slaves. It's a slave state.
They don't have a slave choice. State, sure.
But the resources that are allocated, instead of being allocated to things like food and housing, they are allocated to things like cyber attacks and cyber war.
All right, my friend. Lauren, thank you so much. Lauren Weinstein, expert on the internet. Dead man's unsent text message, leaving his home and pension to his brother rather than his wife and son, signed off with a smiley face, has been ruled legitimate by an Australian court. That's his will on a text message. The Las Vegas sheriff leading the investigation into America's worst mass shooting has said, "We may never know what motivated Stephen Paddock to kill 58 people." Joe Lombardo said that an exam of Paddock's brain has revealed no abnormalities, while his girlfriend, Mary Lou Danley, had no concerns over his mental health. Detectives have contacted every branch of Paddock's family tree, including both his ex-wives, but have no uncovering of anything that would explain his murderous actions. I thought we'd bring in for a moment Neil Slade. He's an expert on the brain. One of his books, of course, called Tickle Your Amygdala. Neil, this is going to come down as one of the strangest stories ever. I thought originally when this happened that Sunday night that maybe they should give him an autopsy and look at his brain. Maybe he had a tumor.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with him.
Well, there's a couple things that I've uncovered. One, he was prescribed Valium.
Yes.
And there's a very strong, there's a thing called a paradoxical effect. And this has been known about Valium, which incidentally is the number one prescribed drug in the United States. And this has been known since 1975. One Canadian study showed that 81% of inmates involved in aggressive incidents had taken Valium, and they were almost four times as likely of acts of aggression than those prisoners not taking Valium. That's one thing. Another thing is that the type of psychotic behavior that can result in psychotic behavior that can result in very violent acts and homicides. One area of the brain called the medial prefrontal cortex is a very small area of the brain. And that kind of defect in brain function wouldn't show up in an autopsy. You'd need to do a functional MRI brain scan on the living subject to see that. Mm-hmm. So just because a tumor wasn't present or any gross abnormality doesn't mean that his brain was functioning properly. One of the things that came to mind to me was thinking about Albert Einstein's brain. Now, they did an autopsy on Einstein's brain, and his brain, even though he was responsible for probably the most wide-sweeping changes to humanity because of his discovery in physics, his brain was virtually normal with a very small change possibly in the number of supportive glial cells in the brain. So you can have very wide range of brain function that cannot be seen in something like a gross abnormality such as a tumor or showing up in an autopsy. But even if there was something wrong with his brain, I don't think a lot of people know that there was a gun regulation that Obama had put into place that was repealed by Congress in February, and that law would have prevented people suffering from psychotic disorders and schizophrenia from getting guns. And that rule was repealed in February. So even if there was something mentally wrong with that person or any other person in that kind of state, they're perfectly able to go out and buy as many guns as they like, even though they may be mentally ill now that that law has been repealed.
Interesting take. Neil, thank you so much. Great observation. Well, today marked the official launch of the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science, an innovative public benefit corporation, which will advance research into unexplained phenomena and develop related technology. It has established three divisions, science, aerospace, and entertainment. It's headed up by company president Tom DeLong, and of course, Tom of the rock group Blink 182 fame. And with us right now, Leslie Kane, to talk about this incredible discovery, I guess, because this is going to uncover some interesting things, will it not, Leslie?
Hi, George. Well, we hope it will. I think the company has incredible potential, and it's formed by these outstanding individuals who have been involved with this issue for a long, long time and have a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge, and a lot of potential. So they intend to develop some pretty incredible things, and I hope they do.
Leslie, of course, is an independent investigative journalist known for pioneering human rights in Burma. She has several books out there, including Surviving Death and UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. You know, Tom has, for some time, been really trying to get to the bottom of U.S. UFOs. Do you think he will with this organization?
Yeah, I mean, I just really take my hat off to him, George, because he's, as you said, he's been working hard for years, and he's managed to work his way into the very, very highest levels, and people take him seriously at those levels. They trust him, and he's put his own resources to forming a company and bringing them all together in one place, and it's really, really an amazing accomplishment. And what I think is really significant about it that stands out, and I wrote a story about this today, is the fact that one of these people was the head of a UFO program within the Department of Defense. He only left that program about 8 days ago, literally.
So it's still continuing,
it's
huh?
Still continuing, and the point is that we now know that there is such a program. This has been a question that people have debated for a long, long time. You know, is there a secret government program? As of today, we know that there is,
mm-hmm.
because the person who headed up that program has come out, told us that there's a program, and told us that because of that program, he knows that this phenomenon is real, that UFOs exist and that they're real. And I find that to be extremely significant because it's true, he's left the Department of Defense, but it's only been 8 days since he left. It's not some guy who's been retired
That's
for,
right.
you know, 20 years and is sitting back in his armchair. And not only was he just recently retired, but he actually was the head of this program.
And the fact that they would even have a program tells you miles, Leslie.
It does, and that they've been saying ever since the close of Project Blue Book, of course, that the U.S. government is not interested in this and doesn't investigate it. So now we know that that's not the case, as people have believed for a long time. And
right.
Finally, we've learned that that's not the case.
Thank you, Leslie. Tom DeLonge will be a future guest on George Knapp's weekend program, so make sure you're just watching the website. Up next, L.A. Marzulli joins us. We're going to talk about Fatima, Miracle of the Sun or Harbinger of Deception, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. We've got a great 2 hours for you. L.A. Marzulli with us, author, lecturer, filmmaker. He has penned a number of books, including the Nephilim Trilogy, and received an honorary doctorate for the series from the Pacific International University. He has lectured on the subject of UFOs, ancient prophetic texts as well. He is a part of the incredible Watchmen Chronicles in those series, his books, of course, Days of Chaos on the Trail of the Nephilim. And now we talk about Fatima, L.A. Fascinating subject. Always interested in this one.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, George. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Now, you went to Portugal to investigate what happened 100 years ago. You didn't go 100 years ago, but it happened. Tell me why.
Well, I was actually in the midst of making another film, and we were in the process of doing interviews for it, and I got sort of a tap on the shoulder, one word, it was Fatima, and I just went, oh my gosh, and I walked into my wife, she was in the other room, and I said, we're going to Fatima, Portugal, and the reason why I did that is I felt like we were supposed to go, and I didn't realize at the time it was the 100th year anniversary. This year is the 100th year anniversary of what happened. Now, I've been a student of the so-called Fatima apparitions for decades, and have, you know, read many books on the subject from all different angles and looked at it, but obviously never had gone to Portugal. And so we flew to Portugal. We spent 2 weeks there. We interviewed historians, anthropologists. We interviewed neuroscientists, people that had spent decades researching this. We went to the site, which was overwhelming, and we went to other apparition sites. And what we discovered sort of cemented what I wrote about, actually, in Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural 10 years ago, that it was a harbinger of deception, in my opinion. And let me just give a caveat before I go any further.
Sure.
You know, millions of people go to Fatima every year, millions of pilgrims. Millions of Muslims encircle the Kaaba stone. Millions of Hindus celebrate Guru Puja. Millions of Buddhists worship at thousands of temples all over Asia. The film is not to disparage anyone's belief system. That's not what the film is about. The film is about what happened between May 13, 1917, and the startling event in October 13, 1917, which is called the Miracle of the Sun, which, by the way, I believe is a misnomer. Like Mothman in 1967-68, was called that, this entity that appeared in Point Pleasant and terrorized people and appeared to hundreds of people over a period of time, was labeled Mothman by a reporter. We have no idea what this entity was, what his name was. It's a misnomer. And the same thing with the Miracle of the Sun. There was a reporter in Fatima, and I'm getting way ahead of myself, but I need to kind of give the background story here. There was a reporter in the field who wrote the story the following day in O Seculo, which is a major newspaper in Lisbon. He was the one who coined the name Miracle of the Sun. Remember, when these people are there, they have nothing in their paradigm that is going to help them put a label on the events that happened. But I'm way ahead of the story, so go ahead.
Okay, now let's talk about Fatima and exactly what was the episode that's been reported, and that had to do with three children. October 13th, 1917, saw the apparition of a woman, which we believe to be the Blessed Virgin Mary.
Right.
Pick it up from there.
Well, this is where it goes off the rails. When you go back to the 1917 documents, which we draw everything from, we don't go to the documents from like 1928, 1930s, the 40s, 50s. There are almost two Fatimas. There's the original Fatima, which happened in 1917, and those documents are handwritten by the priest, Father Fiera, who actually gave them to Bishop Formaggio, and I know I'm not pronouncing that right, but he gave them in 1923 after the actual all the witness testimonies. But they're all written in longhand, and we've had access to some of those. We draw this from several books, specifically by Joaquin Fernandez and Fina Di Armada. Fina passed away in 2014, so we were able to talk to her daughter, Frederica, and we were actually in Fina's house filming there with all this just voluminous research. It was just absolutely incredible. And the story is this, that in 1978, Fina was given access to the sanctuary at Fatima. These records at the Fatima Sanctuary, which, by the way, can hold 1 million pilgrims at one time. That's how huge it is. And when you go there, it's breathtaking. And we got there about 8 o'clock at night. It was on a July evening, actually July 12th, and it was just a little bit of wind blowing through the pines, soft music playing, and it was breathtaking. And it's absolutely humongous, but I digress. The bottom line is, Fina was given access to the sanctuary at Fatima, to these documents, to the original records, which had been kept in a vault, and really no one had looked at them for decades, literally. So Fina gets in there, and she discovers things, and she's not allowed to take any photographs, but what she does is she takes a tape recorder in, and she reads the transcripts to the tape recorder, and she published the book. And it was extremely controversial when it came out, because it's completely different than the story that most of us know. First of all, you mentioned that it was Mary of the Bible. The original title of the film was Mary of the Bible or A Harbinger of Deception. When we got to Fatima on the 12th, the next day, and we did this deliberately, was one of the apparition days. She appeared on the 13th of the month from May to October. Every 13th of the month for 6 months she appeared to these kids, or an entity appeared. So when we got there, it was overwhelming, but the next day, all the pilgrims showed up, and there were thousands of them from all over the world, and they had the statue of, you know, what they believe is Mary, but it doesn't look like a Jewish; it looks very Caucasian, and that's another story. But with a crown on her head, on a bed of roses, being held up by four pallbearers, parading through the square, and thousands of people are waving handkerchiefs. I turned to my wife and my guide, and I said, "We're taking Mary off the table. We can't even go there." You know, and this is why the caveat at the beginning of the film, millions of pilgrims come to Fatima. We're not here to disparage. They can believe whatever they want to believe. People have the right to believe what they want to believe. We're concerned with the miracle of the sun. But here's the deal. What the records show was that Lucia, who was 10 years old, Francisco, who was 9, and Jacinta, who was 7, these are very, very young children, and they are illiterate, George. They don't read or write. There is no schooling. They're shepherds. They tend the cattle every day. They sit around in the wintertime and listen to stories. I mean, this is their reality. They're dirt roads. There are no airplanes in Portugal in 1917. So these kids are out tending the sheep, and this entity appears. And Lucia
glowing.
Never
it was glowing,
the 1917
right?
records that it's Mary. She never says that. She said it was a lady who said she came from the sky.
And it was glowing, right?
It was very vibrant. It was brighter than the sun. It was sort of amorphous. She could only make out certain features. She never saw the entity's hair. What was very troubling, and this was troubling to both the parish priest and the bishop, who, when when Lucia and Jacinta said that she was wearing a skirt that fell just below the knees, this was. Prostitutes didn't look like this in 1917. I mean, women wore ankle you know, dresses that were
right,
down to the ankle.
Right, of course. They never showed their legs.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it was. And the fact that this Lucia and Jacinta said that the entity, whatever this thing was, had a short skirt. It was a skirt that fell just below the knee.
That's weird. I never knew that.
Extremely controversial. Extremely controversial. But it's in the original documents.
This object that apparently came in front of the sun was witnessed by how many people?
Well, this is what happens. From May 13th, when the apparition appears, no one is there, just the three children.
Right.
By the way, there's a fourth witness, we can get into that later, who went under the radar for decades until Fina found her. But that's another side story. But she also had an encounter with another being, with blonde hair, by the same tree, who communicated with her telepathically. And this woman, Carolina Carriera, wasn't sure whether it was a boy or a girl, about 8 years old, and she was being communicated with voice to skull telepathically. So, and that's like slightly before the apparitions begin. And these apparitions happen on May 13th. So by June, there's a few people who are gathered on the 13th, because Lucia has told everybody that this entity, this whatever it was, this woman, this lady, is going to return on the 13th.
All right, hold on. We'll get to that return date when we come back right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we will return in a moment to talk with L.A. Marzulli about Fatima, Miracle of the Sun or Harbinger of Deception. Great story. We'll take your calls with him next hour as well. As you know, this month we are having our trivia question, and there's a new series of questions every day. There's a drawing at the end of the week for $500. If you get one or all five during the week of these questions right, you get one to five entries for that $500. So enter as often as you can. It's all at coasttocoastam.com. However, I do read the questions too, so let me read this to you. A close asteroid flyby has sparked apocalyptic warnings of which anniversary occurring near this time? A, the 50th anniversary of Sag Harbor UFO case? B, the 100th anniversary of the Marian apparition at Fatima? C, the 100th birthday of JFK? D, the 28th anniversary of the 1989 San Francisco earthquake? For entry info and rules, visit coasttocoastam.com. Welcome back to Coast, L.A. Marzulli with us. We're talking about Fatima and that incredible story that occurred 100 years ago. L.A., we were talking about the story of the sun and how many people witnessed this. And you were telling us that a number of people came back around June of 1817. Tell us what happened.
Well, in June, there was a handful of people that gathered there, and the entity showed up again. It was interesting. Only the children could see her. Only Lucia and Jacinta and Francisco could see the entity. Only Lucia and Jacinta could hear her speak. Francisco was not able to hear. He saw the entity, but never heard her speak. And it was always voice to skull. It was always telepathic. So in July, the crowds were swelling.
And by the way, 1917. I think I just said 1817.
Yeah, the crowds were swelling in July, and it becomes extremely controversial. The parish priest, Father Fierra, and what was interesting here, a little sidebar quickly, that Fierra always believed right from the get-go that the whole thing was demonic, did not believe that whatever was going on was Mary of the Bible. And he was a controversial figure. So when he gives his report after an exhaustive study and talking to the witnesses and everything else, and this is the report from 1917, handwritten witnesses from May to October 13th, he goes missing, George. He falls off the face of the earth.
Oh, geez.
No one knows what happens to the guy. And we're actually trying to find out what happened to him. Did he have a family? You know, like a mother and father, cousins, a brother, sister? We're trying to track it down, because that's a story in itself that's never been told. He absolutely vanishes from history. But I digress. So here's the deal. In September, this whole thing is getting controversial. The parish priest is up in arms about it, the bishop, the magistrates, and is drawing all these crowds. And Lucia never says it's Mary. She says it's a lady. And when she asked where did she come from, she pointed to the sky.
Mm-hmm.
That's all in the 1917 documents uncovered by Fina de Armada in their book, Joaquin Fernandez, Fina de Armada, Celestial Lights, Heavenly Lights. And they're incredible books if you want to, people want to get them. We interviewed Joaquin. And he comes on the record in the film. So in September, they tell the kids, the magistrates and the priests, they say, go back to this entity, this lady, and ask her, we need a sign. We need something to show that this is real. So the kids go back, and they say, look, you know, we need a sign. And the entity tells them, come on October 13th, and there will be a sign. So word spreads like wildfire. Through Portugal.
And they didn't have social media in those days.
People don't realize that in 1917, there are no cell phones. The cameras that they have are wooden boxes with glass plates.
That's right.
That's what we're looking at. There are no airplanes in Portugal, maybe one in Lisbon. Probably 99% of the people in that field that day have never seen any type of aerial phenomena at all. Nothing. They've never seen an object you know, other than a bird in the sky. So when I'm getting ahead of myself here, but what finally manifests, it's shocking. And there's no paradigm in which these people can embrace it. So 70,000 people gather in the field at Fatima. They are awaiting the sign. The kids are there. I mean, 70,000 people. George,
that's huge.
Think about this.
That's a big football stadium.
It's a huge crowd. It's a huge crowd. And we've got pictures, which we actually, black and white photos, which we show in the film. They are the original photographs, which we had access to. We show those in the film. And you can see it's a sea of umbrellas. It's been raining all morning long from the wee hours in the morning, like late night, into the wee hours of the morning, all through the morning. There's a sea of umbrellas. People are basically soaked. They are wet to the bone. So at 1 o'clock, the kids are there. Everybody's waiting for this thing. It's supposed to happen at noon. It doesn't. It's an hour late. And at 1 o'clock, the clouds part and the sun comes out. And everyone's relieved because it finally stops raining. Well, and this is where those of you who are Coast Insiders and have listened to the show for decades know that clouds can often hide objects. And in Fatima 2, which is the sequel to the film, we interviewed Chase Klotsky, who's a UFO investigator.
That's right. And a good one.
And a good one. And Chase and I have been in the field together, you know, numerous times now. And she comes on the record, and I ask her about the clouds. I mean, I know about them, but I want someone else to talk about them. And we know that clouds can be used to hide the craft. And somehow these objects, these craft can create the clouds. So what happens in Fatima 100 years ago, the clouds part, the sun is there. People are looking at the sun. They're relieved that it's not raining. But people are still sopped to the bone. Then a cloud goes in front of the sun. And out of this cloud, this is all from a 1917 document. I'm not making it up. It's the handwritten testimonies. Something, an object, comes out of the cloud. And it begins to spin on it like an axis. And as it's doing this, George, it's throwing out all these colors over the crowd. And everyone is completely bedazzled by what they're looking at. I mean, look, if you and I were standing in there in that field, we'd be going, oh my gosh, what is going
exactly
on? What is that?
But who reported that in the paper as the sun came down?
Well, this is the deal, and I'll talk about that in just a second.
All right.
So it's spinning, and then like a leaf, it begins to fall to the ground like a leaf motion.
Or a feather.
Like a feather. Where have we heard that before? That's classic in ufology, especially with the disc craft, where when they come to Earth, they descend in this like leaf-like pattern. We've heard this for decades. So, and then it goes back up. It does this three different times before it does what we call the flyby. This object flies over the crowd less than 100 feet. Now remember, you're standing in a crowd. Most of the people are illiterate. They can't read or write.
That's
They've
right.
They've never seen an aircraft. They've never seen a plane. They've never seen one in the sky, okay?
All they see is the sun, the moon, things
it.
Like that.
That's it. And this thing comes out of a cloud and buzzes the crowd. It does a flyby. People are freaked out. There's a priest who we actually show in the film. It's just a quick little clip. He was a child standing in that field, and now he's like an older man, and he's now a priest, probably in his late 60s, early 70s. I'm not sure, but that's what he looks like to me. And he's very emotional as he talks about it. This is what he says, verbatim. This is the translation.
All right.
The disc
uh-huh.
turned tan color and then descended so low that we thought it was going to crush us. Now, all that's real, and I get that. I was buzzed by a Cessna. Like 35 years ago, I was walking on the beach in Malibu with my dad, and I heard this really weird sound. I didn't know what it was, and it got louder. And I looked behind me, and it's like, you know, I know what it is instantly. It's an airplane. It's a Cessna. But, George, this thing is like maybe 60 feet above the beach. And I grabbed my dad, and we both hit the sand as this thing. We were terrified, and we knew what it was, and we were terrified. Something that low, moving that fast overhead, it's unbelievable. So there are lawyers in the field, a few lawyers, medical doctors. There are men of letters. They do come on the record. Not everyone comes on the record, but some people do. And this is what we hear. This is from a lawyer. I looked up and saw a dull silver disc. And the word dull, silver, and disc is used by multiple witnesses.
That's amazing.
Over and over and over again.
And might the object have come down, L.A., to cloak the sun so those people who really weren't in the know might have thought it was the sun?
This is what I think. I think that people were so blown away. There was nothing in their paradigm to deal with this.
No, nothing to compare.
Nothing to compare it to. So the newspaper guy who writes the story calls it the miracle of the sun. But and this we interviewed this guy for the film. He's just a brilliant man. And he plotted the flyby and the, where the witnesses were and talks about the different phenomenon that these people felt, from the drying of the clothes to skin burns to the buzzing in the ears. I mean, this is all UFO 101. I mean, that's what it is. But he talks about if the sun is the size of a watermelon and the earth is the size of a head of a match, there's no way that the sun came out of its place in the solar system and descended to
no,
Earth. We'd all be fried.
That we know for
that
sure.
We know. So it wasn't the sun, and everybody on Earth and other places would have known that. It was not the sun. It was something else. It's a misnomer. That's why I use Mothman, because it's a great example.
Yeah.
And I know most of your listeners know who he is, so I don't have to, you know, go through a 30-minute explanation. I can do the shorthand. Mothman is a misnomer. No one knows what the entity really called, what it was. No one knows. It was given that name by a reporter. In the same way, 100 years ago, Fatima, Portugal, a reporter calls it the miracle of the sun. This has been repeated literally millions and millions and millions of times up to the present day. But when you go back to the 1917 records and you listen to what the witness testimonies say, it's not the sun. It's a silver disc. Some people describe it as a bright metallic object. Others call it an orb. Depending on where you are in the field, you're going to have a different vantage point. And we know that witnesses will never say the same thing. You know, they use different words to describe what they're seeing. But the phenomenon is completely outside the realm of anyone's paradigm. So they have nothing in which to relate it to. And that's where they're called. And remember, in 1917, the words that we know and that everyone who's listening on this show know, UFOs, flying saucers, that is not in the lexicon. That won't happen for decades later. So there's no word that UFO, flying saucer. So they're calling it a dull silver disc. What does that sound like to you?
Well, it sounds like some kind of craft.
Absolutely.
L.A., what about the three secrets of Fatima that apparently has been kicked around for some time, that even the late Father Malachi Martin discussed? These three secrets, what were they? Did they come up at all in this?
What's interesting is, and we didn't delve into it. I even in Fatima 2, the sequel, I'll tell you what I think. Based on the research, this is what happens to Lucia. The other two seers, Jacinta dies first. She's like 9 years old.
She dies as a child.
As a very child, she's only
right.
9 years old. She was seven when she saw the entity. 2 years later, she dies of influenza. Francisco, same thing. He succumbs to influenza shortly thereafter. He never reaches his teenage years. So we have one seer that's left, Lucia. That's it. At 18 years old, she's hustled off by the Jesuits to a convent and given a vow of silence.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't know this.
They quiet her up.
Absolutely. In 1928, this is 11 years after the events, okay? In 1928, she writes her memoirs. She writes about the first and second secret. There is no mention in the 1917 documents. And people can take issue with this. Go back and read the 1917 documents. If it was so important, why didn't she talk? She never mentions Russia. There are no secrets. It's not there, George. It's not there. But the bottom line is, this is why...
Was it made up by the church?
Well, I don't want to go there, but yes.
You're going to have to if I ask. Now, you're going to get some calls about that, L.A., next hour. You know that.
I know that, and it's very controversial. And again, we're not, I'm not here trying to disparage anyone's belief. If someone wants to believe that it was Mary in the Bible, more power to you.
Well, and none of this negates the belief of God.
No, of course, look, you know where I'm at. I mean, I'm a believer. I mean, I am. but I'm also a frank supernaturalist. And the bottom line is, just because we see something or just because we encounter something, we have no idea whether it's benevolent or malevolent.
Can we conclude that on that date in October of 1917, something dramatic happened to these three children?
There's no doubt that something happened. A phenomenon happened that was incredible. And then from that, the drying of the clothes, the buzzing in the ears. George,
They didn't make this story up.
No. Windshields of cars exploded. The car motor wouldn't start. Gasoline spontaneously combusted. All that has been removed from the official story that we now
know. I bet batteries were cooked.
Absolutely. It's just like modern ufology. The cars wouldn't start. People had radiation burns. People had burns on their skin.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters.
Or the Cash Landrum incident. So all that's there in the 1917 document.
Why? I've got to ask you this. Why would the church create this as more of a spiritual religious event rather than an extraterrestrial event?
1917 is very complex. You've got the First Republic being formed, World War I is raging, the Bolsheviks are about to overtake Russia. You've got the Balfour Declaration that is being foisted up in the halls of power in Great Britain. It's a very tumultuous, controversial time. When Lucia writes the memoirs in 28, she talks about consecrating Russia to the Sacred Heart of Mary. In my opinion, in my humble opinion, this is a confabulation. Russia was never mentioned in the 1917 document. And the reason why this is there is because everyone on the planet by 1928 is absolutely terrified of the Bolsheviks. I mean, look what Hitler did. Hitler blamed everything either on the Jews or the communists. And that's what was going on from 1917 onward. That's why I think this story was manipulated. Look, Lucia had a gag order. Basically, a vow of silence, that's a gag order.
Yeah, and she lived to be pretty old, didn't she?
Yeah, she died, I think, in 2004, 2005.
Yeah, I remember. I was doing the program when it was interesting,
Cardinal Ratzinger, Pope Benedict, when he was a staunch believer in the Marian apparition, specifically at Fatima, and he distanced himself in his pontificate from, and he said, and I mean, I've got the quote, he says, well, Fatima was for another time. Meanwhile, the new Pope, Francis, is a staunch believer in it. So something happened in 1917, and I actually show in Fatima 2 clips from modernity, the 2009 apparition over the Coptic Church in Egypt, which is just four blobs of light, George. That's all they are.
Yeah.
And everybody's, freaking out, clapping hands. Muslims and Christians are together. No one's rebuking this thing. No one's taking the authority. No one's challenging it. They're all, it's got to be Mary of the Bible. Why? Because how do you know that? It's four blobs of light. Same thing in Knock, Ireland. The sun is pulsating, but it's something in front of the sun which is causing this to do that. I mean, it's not the sun that's pulsating because it's just regional. It's just in this one area. So something there's some sort of atmospheric disturbance which is happening, and you should hear the people. They're just going absolutely bonkers. Everyone just accepts this as a miracle. Not so fast, citizen. And I'm a frank supernaturalist. You know this. We are told in the guidebook of a supernatural to test the spirits. That's what we're admonished to do. Just because something appears in the room, I don't know whether it's benevolent or malevolent. You don't know
initially.
Absolutely. So you got to test it.
And
no one's testing anything there.
We're going to take this break, L.A. We're going to come back. I've got more questions, and, of course, you're going to get flooded with phone calls here. I want to know if there's any tie-in between Ezekiel's wheel that they talked about in the Bible and this situation as well, and much more when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.